We're doing Jewish history. We had learned a piece about Job, different opinions about when the story of Job took place. One opinion has it that Job was an advisor to Pharaoh. Another opinion that Job was actually married to Dinah after the story with Shechem. So Dinah married Job. Dinah, one of the daughters of Jacob that was abducted by Shechem. So we have different opinions as to when it happened, if it happened. We had discussed that this all came off of a discussion of what Judaism was like the first few days and months in the desert, where he brought us the institutions of Moshe Rabbeinu, that they should make an after blessing after eating the man, that they should learn the laws of each holiday when the time of that holiday approaches. And he also quoted that the book of Jewish philosophy that Moshe was teaching them in the desert was the book of Job. And so that that led us into a broader discussion of when exactly the book of Job took place and who was the author of the book of Job. There are different sources that discuss if Bilam was also one of the councils, one of the advisors of Pharaoh, who counseled about putting the Jews into slavery. And that would make Bilam 250 years old or more, because actually 210 years of slavery, 40 years in the desert, so that's 250. And when that whole story began, he was already an advisor of Pharaoh, so he was in his 30s, let's say. So that gives Bilam a very long life. So others say that, no, this was a grandson of Bilam, and this was a continuation of the tradition they had from their grandfather Lavan, of how to behave to the Jewish people. So that also leads us to a discussion of whether that was the same Job who advised Pharaoh who was in the book of Job. So that again would make Job very aged. The Medrash says that Job was 70 years old when he suffered these afflictions. Just so that gives us perspective on where Job was. That means that when Job started suffering, he was still in the lifetime of the tribes, Yosef and the other tribes. There are different midrashim as to where the story began. At the Akedah, is that where the Satan came in to speak about Job after Avram was so dedicated to Yitzchak? Then Satan came in to show that Job was not the same as Avram. One of the sources of the discussion is that there's a description that the army that killed Job's children was an army from Sheba, which we assume is Sheba, the queen of Sheba, which we assume is one of the descendants of Nahor. Because Nahor was Abraham's grandfather. One of the people that attacked Job was the Kastim, and Nahor had a son named Kesed, and that's usually who we assume the Kastim were, the descendants of Kesed. So the search for when Job took place revolves around these three figures. One that we discussed last time, that one of Job's friends was Eliphaz. So there's a discussion, is that the Eliphaz we know, the grandson of Esav, that would put the story of Job at a certain juncture in Jewish history. Who were the Kasdim who came, and who were the Sheva, the people of Sheba? Is it the same Kasdim, is it the same Sheba? So those are the three textual sources. Then you have Midrashim, Job marrying Dinah, Job being an advisor to Pharaoh, Job being around the days of Moshe, Job being around in the days of the judges. All of that, you have to work together, but those are the sources we're basically working with. The story of Job being an outcome of the binding of Isaac, that Satan came piped up because Avram stood up to the test on Rosh Hashanah. So then the next year around, Satan comes in and says, I've seen Job who's so pious. I've been around earth, and God says, have you seen Job who's so pious? And Satan says, he's not really so pious. And according to this interpretation, Satan's job was to show that Job didn't come close to Avram, he didn't come close to Abraham. Again, these are the different approaches to the book, which we saw over here in the context of Moshe Rabbeinu teaching the book of Job to the Jews in the desert, that this was the philosophy that he was teaching them the 40 years in the desert. we move forward, the Jews are traveling, they camp in Alush, then they camp in Rephidim, and when they're camped in Rephidim, so then Esav's grandson, Amalek, the son of Eliphaz, the son of Esav, he comes to attack. Now, Amalek has an axe to grind, because the Jews actually demolished his brother Tzipho. Earlier, when we studied the history, we discussed the armies that were amassed in northern Africa and the wars that were fought with the tribes and with the Egyptians, and how the Jews had actually decimated the armies of Esav and his son Tzipho, who was a top general. And now Amalek is coming back to fight Israel that has left Egypt, and he brings with him 1,800,000 soldiers, which we have on tradition that these were soldiers who were sorcerers. So there's a different discussion of what that means, they were sorcerers. So, for example, it says that they were able to figure out with their black magic who would not die that year and who would die that year. And so he brought to war people who, based on the stars, were not destined to die that year. So that seemed like these were people who would for sure win the war, right? So it says that Moshe knew these tricks too. And Moshe, when he chose men with Joshua, also chose men that, according to the stars, wouldn't die that year. You fight fire with fire, whatever that means. Another Midrash says that he chose Jews that were born in the second month of Adar. You know that when we make a leap year, we add a month of Adar. So it seems that in the zodiac, whoever's born in that second Adar doesn't have any mazel. He is not affected by any natural forces. That's a special thing. So the soldiers were only born then. So we were victorious in that war. We have a tradition that that day was prolonged. We know in the book of Joshua, there's a discussion when Joshua went to war. He had a massive war where a bunch of armies united against him. So at that juncture, he saw that he needs more time, and it was Friday afternoon, and the sun stopped. The sun didn't set, Shabbos didn't come in, and he was victorious in the battle. He had an extra long day. So our tradition is that on that day that they fought the war with Amalek, the same thing happened. The daylight hours extended for 36 hours. So we were victorious. We know that Joshua led the war, and we were victorious. And then Hashem tells Moshe, write this down. Everyone should remember it. And when you finally settled in the land of Israel and you have a king, so then you have to lead a war against them to wipe him out. And Hashem warns of the king who would have mercy over Amalek, that Hashem would instead wipe him out. And we know that that's actually what happened, but that's what we're holding in the book of Shmuel. So Joshua, when he leads them to war, is 42 years old. So he's 38 years younger than Moshe. Okay, so Yoshua is 42 years old when he is the chief general, and he is Moshe's right-hand man. When Moshe dies, Joshua will live another 14 years. So Joshua dies at a young age. And at this point, so Moshe's father-in-law decides he's coming to join the Jewish people. And so he's heard that we've been victorious, we've left Egypt, and we're about to receive the Torah, and he starts heading out to the desert with his daughter Tzipporah and her two sons. And Tzipporah actually missed a very important event. When all the women were singing, she wasn't a part of it. And it says that she felt terrible about it. She said, all the Jewish women were part of that song and I wasn't. So the Midrash says that she merited that her soul came back in the prophetess Dvorah, who sang single-handedly a beautiful song that's the Haftarah. So it says that her soul came back because she kept expressing her dissatisfaction with her lot. She prayed before the Creator saying, I wanted to sing a song in your honor. You gave a prophetic song and I wasn't a part of it. And so her wish was granted. So that's where we're up to. The story of Tzipporah rejoining her husband Moshe.